It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
All right, we are in and ready to go. Lots of stuff going on, although Scott doesn't think so. I think there's a lot going on. We're going to talk about it anyway. So now I know you've got some stuff to cover, Scott, so let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Monday's trade was pretty uneventful.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was expecting it really to be a rock and roll kind of day.
I have a whole huge stack of stuff to talk about over here.
Well, let's go then.
I want you to do your thing first.
really, markets were pretty flat. The Dow was down 29, NASDAQ down a point, S&P basically flat. I thought coming off the news of the French election, we'd have a
sell-off.
I thought we'd have a rough day. I really did. It started off that way, but it fought its way back pretty good. And one of the things that's really boosting the market that I think is flying a little bit under the radar are oil prices. Oil down to 98.07 at the close on Monday. That's down 42 cents. But, gas prices are down to 377 on a national average. They've come down really, really quickly. Some money flying into safety tends at 188, but we do have a big 10-year auction on Wednesday, so we'll see how that goes. Good moves for Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, most of the financial sector pretty strong today. A lot of that because there's a bank in Spain that's having a lot of trouble, and the Spanish government has said, well, we'll just go ahead and bail you out.
Really?
So that gave the finance sector a really pretty big boost. The Spain banking system is really, how would you term it? What's an official term? It's a mess. This particular bank is one of the largest banks that they have that they really think is in a lot of trouble. Just to give you how much trouble Spain is in, overall,
this won't be good, ladies
and
gentlemen.
There's about 338 billion euro of total exposure to real estate developers. Spain considers about 176 billion of those loans to be problematic,
that's
the term they use.
A big number.
Yeah, it's a big number. They're going to do their own bailout. They have done a lot of lending to the banks to try to keep them afloat, but this particular one is about a 10 billion euro, just basically gift that they're just going to give to them. There's still more money behind that, and they still have not tapped to anywhere near the total potential some of the broad European money. So,
well, listen, tell me this, Scott. Tell me if I'm thinking correctly. Okay, so let's just pretend for the moment that Spain was not part of the euro. Would they be able to, quote unquote, print money to bail themselves out and be able to try to stimulate themselves out of their situation?
They could. I mean, they'd have a very tightly defined currency. If they're not part of the euro, then they're back to the lira.
Yeah.
Which would be, I think, problematic. It could really cause some real massive inflation problems. Keep in mind, they already have huge unemployment there. So there's really nothing to like there. Unemployment rate is at an 18-year high of 24.4. Also, they announced, you may remember last week, we talked about that they had announced another quarter of shrinkage in GDP, so they're among the roles of those in recession.
Who's not? Germany?
Germany's not. France is not, technically. There's a handful of them. England is. Spain is. It's still going to be just rough going there for a while. And then the other big news from overseas, big elections in France and Greece, both of whom said in a very loud voice, the population said, no more austerity. If you say you're for austerity, you are out of office, and we're bringing in the left wing. Even some neo-Nazi party in Greece were elected into office.
Wow. So when they say that, Scott, they're saying, okay, we don't want austerity. That means we don't want you to have to cut spending.
Yeah.
And or we don't want you to raise taxes, or is it just simply don't cut the spending?
Well, I mean,
or both.
I mean, the rhetoric is austerity is, you know, we're going to grow. The rhetoric is we're going to grow our way out of
instead
it.
Instead of cutting
not,
our way
yeah,
out.
Yeah, not cut our way out of it. So.
Well, I like that. I like that if there's really a growth policy, if it's not just piling on more debt.
Well, the way they're going to grow is by spending. They've been pretty clear about it.
The big question is who gets to spend it? Is it the government spending the money, or is it the people whose money it really is spending it?
I think in France, there's no question it'll be the government spending
yeah.
it.
And I think that's the problem.
Yeah. So we'll see. So big news from overseas. Really not unexpected news, but I thought we'd sell off harder on it. We didn't, so that was good news.
Maybe the oil is helping. You think that
the
could
oil
be
is definitely helping? No question.
But your earnings
about it.
Numbers are really good too.
Earnings numbers have been terrific. Even some more good earnings numbers today from Tyson Foods. We get Electronic Arts before the open, so there really are more and more good earnings numbers. 70% of the companies, almost 70%, that have announced earnings have beaten their estimates. Normally, it's about 62%. And the projection for next quarter's earnings growth over the previous year is almost 9%.
That's so, very high.
Yeah, the corporations just still keep rocking. If we could get more people to work who had more money to spend, then, I mean, we'd really be getting somewhere, I think.
We'd be in high cotton, as we would say in the South.
The highest of cotton, yes. And then one other little piece of just corporate news I want to share with you, Talbot's. You know, ladies' clothes retailer Talbot's, who has just done everything they can to get in their own way, has agreed to enter conversations with a private equity company called Sycamore to go private.
You know what their problem is?
They've had very poor management. That's a good
well,
start.
Well, and I think a lot of it is in the marketing. They, the perception, and I'm not a woman shopping for clothes, but the perception I've heard and I see is that women think it's really old woman clothes.
Well, they've tried to fight for that. They have vied for younger customers. They have gone through a number of different celebrity spokes models. They've overhauled stores, closed stores. None of it really has seemed to work. Perhaps they haven't been aggressive enough about it or cutting edge enough about it. But this private equity firm that's buying them out went to them last year and said, hey, we'll give you $3 a share. And they said, no, we're worth a lot more than $3 a share. Well, in the meantime, they had a lousy earnings announcement, and the company, the private equity firm, came back and said, we'll give you $3.05 a share. And Talbot said, okay, well, come on in, let's talk about it. So we'll see how that goes.
They need to get like an 18-year-old pop person to wear their clothes and make them look good or something. I don't know.
They definitely had their work cut out for them.
Okay. Well, you want to stick around after the break? I got a couple things to bounce off you.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Connor has agreed to stay a little longer, so we're going to indulge, and we will be right back. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Talking on the break about the merits of sending kids to camp.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing.
Yep. I'd send them for years at a time.
What a good dad. Hey, here's a couple interesting things I wanted to share with you, Scott. I've got the stack of stuff over here.
I was going to bring you that Domino's story.
Yeah, Scott.
I knew you'd have it, though.
Yeah, Scott comes in. He's got like one sheet of paper, and he's got all the stuff he tells you. He's not even looking at the paper. He just holds the paper to make it seem like he's got prep, but he's got it all memorized.
I was going
to
bring this next one, too.
All right, well.
Just for you.
Okay, well, since you introduced it, Domino's is now offering a gluten-free pizza crust.
It's good.
It's a great idea. Okay, so here, and this is USA Today reported. So before you call up Domino's and order your gluten-free pizza, if you think you need that. And you know, one of the things that's a challenge right now, Scott, is a lot of people are kind of looking at this as a diet, a way to lose weight.
Yeah.
And the truth is, because my wife has a gluten issues, and she's doing very well with adapting once she got diagnosed properly. And the truth is that a lot of people see it as a diet, and it's not a diet. A lot of the gluten-free foods are actually higher in calories.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, but and here's the other problem. You know, Domino's probably has gluten-free pizza crust, but they'll go and put they'll put pepperoni or sausage or other stuff on it that has wheat in it, and not realize, you know, that they're putting that on top. They'll cook it in the same oven with obviously other pizzas, and they'll, you know, where they change gloves every time they do a gluten-free order. So the reality is that be careful if you've got gluten intolerances or wheat issues. Celiacs, one out of every 133 Americans are celiacs, and that's 3 million people, and only a handful actually know that they're celiac, and they may have no symptoms and still be very, you know, causing real damage. So before you ring up the Domino's, think twice before you get that
done.
So
you suspect it's more gluten light than gluten free.
Yeah, I think it's like, I try to think of a good analogy and I couldn't think of one. I just think you got to be really careful. I, even knowing that my wife has the gluten issues and she's helped me understand the things I need to do, sometimes I forget.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I gave her some pecans I'd gotten some from Publix and I'd gotten some pecans and I put them on her plate. I made her like a little breakfast. And she goes, which pecans were those? I said, they're over there on the counter. She goes, oh, no, you can't. And she said, you can't use those. I've got to have these other ones. So it's very easy to forget. So do you think the person who's, you know, running pizza is going to be really, okay, let me think about,
yeah,
you know.
My son used to go to daycare at the Jewish Community Center, and it was difficult for us to remember to make his lunch kosher, as at least as well as we could every day. So
because that would be offensive.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, here's another one that's really interesting. This one really tells us where we are in this world. USA Today has their little snapshots, and I like them. And so this one says, where would you like changes or improvements in your life? And not with your wife, with your life, okay? And they did a survey of 1,000 people, 513 women and 487 men. And so number one on the list, finance.
More money. Yeah,
finances.
Sure.
Men, 75% wanted better finances. Women, 81%. Health, 52% for men, 60% for women. Wanting more intelligence, 54% men, 58% women. So guys are like, dumb's not so bad.
Yeah.
appearance, that's another funny one. The men were like 42%. Be all right to be a little bit better looking or be a little trimmer or whatever. Women, 68%. Very conscious. And self-esteem, 33% for men, 38% for women. So I thought that was funny that obviously the one I tuned into was the finances, and that people are still really, really focused on that. Now, here's the one that really struck me as funny. Okay, so top action workers feel are grounds for termination. So here are the reasons why workers, and this was another survey. This was a bigger survey of 2,600 adults over 18. And these are the reasons that people should get fired. Number one on the list, appropriately so, sexual harassment of a coworker, 85%. Who are the 15% that said, nah, it's okay?
Yeah.
And then incompetence on the job, 82%.
Okay, competence is important.
So where are the 20%? It's okay. You don't have to be competent.
Yeah, competence is important.
Taking confidential files, 80%. Sexual relations with subordinate, 65%. Here's the one that really made me laugh, though. Okay, not performing expectation, 57% said that's a reason. So 40% said, okay, you don't have to show up on time. You don't have to do your work. Just be there. Get there if you can.
I can tell you, though, there is a huge difference between working for a small firm and working for a big firm. Because in a big firm,
you hide.
You can hide pretty easy. In a little firm, you can't. So I'd be curious to know what kind of firms.
Well, you'd like to think it would be a cross-section of all separate size firms. Because I can tell you right now, at Holland Financial, nobody here thinks that there ain't no 40% of our people that think that you can just not perform to expectations, or 20% that think they can be incompetent on the job.
I worked in a big call center in Maitland that was, I don't know, many, many, many hundreds of people, and there were plenty of folks there that were hiding.
You can be invisible with a couple hundred people.
Yeah, we called it trading time for money. Folks are just trading time for money.
Hanging out.
Yep.
Crazy. Well, speaking of trading time for money, he would. He would trade money for time. That's a better way to put it. Warren Buffett. Okay, back in the news. And
he did 3 hours on CNBC Monday morning.
That's pretty amazing.
Oh, God, it was excruciating.
No, but think about the stamina that it takes. Did he play his banjo?
No.
Okay.
Talked a lot.
I thought maybe he might have done the banjo and you do the harmonica.
No, he talked quite a bit, though.
What if we can arrange that? You guys could have a little duo.
Doubtful.
Well, he's under... The thing right now that's being talked about on Wall Street and, of course, in the papers is he's a little bit out of step right now. He's not doing as well as...
He hasn't done well for several years compared to the S&P.
So people are going, what's going on? But he reassured... They're having their big get-together.
They had their annual meeting.
Meeting, yeah. 35,000 people are going to come to the meeting.
Yeah, they had it this past weekend.
And 95% of the people voted against a proposal for more details on the succession plan. So they want to keep it a big secret. I don't know. If I'm 81, he's got prostate cancer. He's in treatment.
Yeah, his partner's 88. Charlie Munger's 88.
He's the young guy in the group.
He said that only uncivilized people buy gold. So he said that this weekend.
Wow.
They're very anti-gold right now.
How to make friends and influence people by Warren Buffett.
They're being very vociferous, surprisingly.
Well, here he said in the shareholder meeting, he said he's feeling well after his recent diagnosis with the prostate cancer. And that the company is ready to replace him when the needs arise. We're just not going to tell you what that is. And on and on, they looked at doing some acquisitions. And he says he thinks that the diagnosis is a non-event. He plans to undergo radiation treatment in July, but he says shouldn't have any effect on his daily routine. He says, quote unquote, I may have a little less energy, but that may mean I do a few fewer dumber things. That's what he said.
Yeah, so, you know, he was saying that last year they considered a $22 billion acquisition.
That's a big acquisition.
It's huge. It's like it's like buying all of Procter & Gamble. So I don't know. He never did disclose what company it was, but they definitely are not resting on
their
laurels. That
would fit his basket of goods for sure.
He's already got a good chunk of it. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that was it.
Well, if he's feeling a little less energetic and he wants to maybe cut out some of the dumb things, I'm going to make it real easy for him. Just stop talking about politics and the tax code.
Yeah, I don't know why he's such a media celebrity.
Well, he's 81. And if you're 81 and you've done what he's done, you know, I will give him this. He should bask a little bit in his sun, you know, what do they call it? This is the sunset years.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 81. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that will live to 100, but he's walking around eating ice cream, Dairy Queen ice cream on the floor of their shareholder meeting. Good stuff, Scott.
Yeah, good for him.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
We're back, and thank you, Lisa, who's keeping us on time. She's waving that 5-second warning flag feverishly, even though we ignore her looking over our shoulder. Scott, what do you think about what's going on with bonds? You know, there's a couple articles recently, Wall Street Journal covered the issues and help. You know, people are going, should I invest in bonds? You know, interest rates go up. I know they're going to go down, but should they be part of my portfolio? And why should they be part of the portfolio if I know they're going to go down?
Yeah, well, you have to have some bonds for risk management because they are, with just a few historical exceptions, significantly less volatile than equities, and that's why
you
have
them. Well, they move in the opposite direction?
Usually.
Not always.
Not always, but you buy them because you get that diversification. There's a lack of correlation, they call it, and also much, much lower volatility from the standpoint of standard deviation.
Yeah, I call it making it more viscous, kind of like motor oil, where it gets thicker and it won't move as much.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the other thing is that with bonds, there's different ways to make returns. You can make return on the movement of the bond prices, depending on how you're invested in them. You can make money on the yield. You can trade in and out of mutual funds, or if you just want to be really, really conservative, you can just buy a bond and hold it. And if you have a good quality bond, you don't have to worry about getting your money back. Now, there's a trade-off for that. You lose liquidity, and if you want to reinvest that at a higher rate, then you know you've got a problem there. But I think bonds are an important part of all but the most aggressive investors' portfolios.
I'd agree with that. Let's say somebody's going to take that last strategy, which I know that you don't necessarily recommend because you don't have a lot of diversification, and you know also buying individual bonds, you are and you have to sell them later. You really are dealing with sometimes very thin trading.
Yeah, very thin trading and sometimes very, very wide spreads, meaning the difference
between... it's a big markup.
Yeah, meaning the difference between what a dealer buys the bond for and then sells it to you is a big difference. If you're dealing in bond lots of $5,000, you're at a distinct disadvantage.
That means that the folks that are willing to buy it from you, these are dealers, these are the broker-dealer firms, and they are buying it for their own inventory to then sell to somebody else, right?
That's right.
Make money on you. It's kind of like a... best example or a good analogy would be the currency traders, not on Wall Street, but the ones in the airports. And you're going to go overseas, and you're going to trade some of your money. You're going to get what they're willing to pay you for your American dollars. They'll give you, okay, let's say you're going to go to Europe, you're getting a euro. They'll give you so many of those, and they're going to make money on that transaction. And if you don't use all your money, and you come back, you sell it back, they're going to make it again.
Right.
So the bond, this is what the bond traders do.
Yeah, and the spreads are really, really, really wide, particularly for small lots, which is what individuals, you know, get tied up in. Then you have to worry about, well, if you've got all your bond money in just one or two companies, what happens if something happens to one or two of those companies? And people say, well, I buy quality bonds. Okay, but look what happened to GM and AIG, and I mean, it's and Enron, they were AAA a handful of months before they collapsed. So even a AAA bond or even a government bond is not absolutely 100%, no matter what, guaranteed.
Let's say somebody wanted, and again, I agree with you. I don't think we'd ever recommend that for a person. But what if somebody says, okay, I'm just going to buy a 10-year bond and just sit on it and just collect my interest, okay? What kind of rates are we looking at right now? They're not very high.
They're not high at all.
Corporate bond, what are we looking at, 3 or 4%?
Yeah.
Maybe 5%?
Depending on the credit rating. But a 10-year treasury today
is under
closed
two.
At 188.
Okay, so if you're going to add on a little bit of risk, corporate bond, 3 or 4%?
Yeah, so let's say 3 or 4%, but then you're fighting inflation at maybe 3%, so your net return is nothing, and in the meantime, you've locked up that money. You know, it's really, really hard to get to it, so you've got that cost, and you're basically getting no return for that cost.
And I think you've just poured cement, because we all expect interest rates to go up at some point, and if you've got a bond that's 10 years in length, and interest rates go up 2%.
Yeah, the time to lock in bonds is... you know, when Jimmy Carter was president, you could get a 30-year bond for 12%, or at the height of the stock market peak when the tech bubble in 1999-2000, 10-year treasuries were 8-9%. That's not a bad time to lock in a rate, but right now at 188 on a 10-year,
so
there's no good side.
There's
of
no
trade.
Good side of, so you have to either go with higher risk bonds, but that really makes the argument for having a good diversified portfolio. Those it would be really, what's the right word? Reckless to buy a handful of high yield junk bonds and try to hold them to maturity, right?
Yeah, and even in our bond portfolios, we use a combination of funds and ETFs. Number one, because I like liquidity, and number two, because it allows me to spread the money out more. So we have very high credit quality government, we have very high credit quality corporate, we have some high yield, we have some international, you know, we have some of a little bit of everything, and they're also movable enough that if things start to change, then I can adjust that.
Well, with that, because you're holding, you're doing the bonds and the different, all these different types of bonds, international, emerging market, U.S., corporate debt, all these things. On top of that, you're buying such a small percentage of each issuer.
Yeah.
So you're going to have maybe 1% of the money that's in bonds, even in one company like a GM or a Johnson & Johnson or an IBM.
And if that company failed, we wouldn't even know it.
Now, you wouldn't even notice it,
The other side of that that you have to keep in mind with bond funds is that if we go through an experience like we went through in 2008, they can move in the same direction and with sort of similar velocity as the stock market. But you know, clients who just stuck to their discipline, maintained their allocation, they weren't hurt anywhere near as much as clients who were either all equity or who panicked and sold bonds at the wrong time.
Yeah, when I was writing the book, I did research, Secret Secure Retirement. One of my chapters I talk about is investing and using a portfolio of both stocks and bonds. I went back and looked at 30 years and getting that bond allocation, even for a more growth-oriented portfolio, it's still helped to eliminate a lot of the losses.
Yeah, sure.
Really did. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back, and I've just asked Scott to indulge us a little bit longer today. He's itching to get to the portfolio management, but, well, I've got to get his response on this, okay? And I've been trying to keep him from seeing what I've got over here. Okay, ready, Scott? USA Today had this article, and we'll try to get it out without laughing. Boomers retiring help lower the jobless rate. Discouraged workers aren't the bulk of labor force dropouts. Now listen to this. See, okay, analysis by two economists show that growing baby boomer retirements were behind most of the decline in the labor force and those employed and looking for work. Payroll growth was disappointing for a second straight month, yada, yada, yada. But here we go. Many more employed than unemployed Americans dropped out of the labor force last month, likely indicating that most were retirees rather than discouraged workers.
Yeah, and that's why we only created 115,000 jobs and the unemployment rate went down.
Don't they see the hole in that? I mean, they're trying to spin it. And this is by, that's a quote from Mark Zandi. And again, I'm sorry, I have to get a little political here, ladies and gentlemen. He is a registered Democrat. And he is basically trying to make it sound like that baby boomers are retiring or why that people are dropping out of the labor force. And Scott's exactly right. If that were the case, well, if they were retiring in droves, then there'd be tremendous amount of jobs available, right?
Right, because those would have to be replaced.
So why would there only be 115,000?
Because we're just not creating jobs. That's all there is to
it. Yeah, but all these baby boomers are retiring, Scott. They're giving up their jobs and saying, hey, here you go. Pass it on down the line. The next guy ready? You don't have a job? Come take my job, and I'm going to retire.
They're not passing it down.
Because it's not there.
Yeah.
Because there's no job. It's baloney. Let's see. We had another one, Dean Mackey, who said they looked at closely track. Watch this. He says that talking about this change closely tracks a rise in Social Security recipients. The increase in boomer retirements likely meant that job growth of only listen to this. You're going to love this. Job growth of only 75 to 100,000 a month is all you need to keep unemployment rates steady.
Yeah, I mean, if you manage the number enough, I'm sure he's right. Well, so we only created 115 and it went down.
So what they're doing is saying it's okay that it's only 115. That's good. We're keeping the number steady. We're making progress,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, but you know what was funny though? Last week when the number came out, everybody knew the number. The fact that the unemployment rate went down was meaningless. Everybody knew it. Even the White House knew it. So they were like, "Don't you guys feel terrific about the unemployment number going down?" And they were like, "Yeah, it's okay. Let's talk about something else." Because everybody who read the first 10 pages of the unemployment report would get through that and say, "Well, this number is meaningless. This 8.1%.
Exactly. The 8.1 means nothing, and this is a feeble attempt at best in USA Today of trying to defend." Number one, trying to smoke and mirrors and saying, oh, no, look over. It's like Johnny Cochran saying, look over here. You know, he was defending OJ. Look over here. Don't look at this over here. Look over here at this information.
Yeah.
Trying to distract everybody.
Yeah, I would encourage people to read the first 8 or 10 pages of the unemployment report every month. You can breeze through it pretty quickly. It's not real technical, but it will really give you a sense of really how meaningless that number is.
Well, piece de resistance at the very end here. You'll love this. I went and looked up Mark Zandi, who is making these comments, because I wanted to know a little bit about him. And this is hysterical. There was this article I found from 2011 that was the Daily Caller. Anyway, it's an online publication, but they said, with Obama's administration pushing for a new round of stimulus spending, some conservative advocacy groups are pushing back on Zandi and his position of being kind of a neutral economist. And let's see, they said Mark Zandi's a registered Democrat and an advocate for Keynesian economics, says Barney Keller, a spokesman for the influential Club for Growth. And he says, quote unquote, he's about as conservative as Paul Krugman and wrong just as often. Anyway, I think that wraps it up for today, doesn't it, Lisa? All right. Well, anyway, this stuff can be kind of silly. So it's getting desperate in the papers, ladies and gentlemen. So
and we're just getting warmed up.
We're just getting warmed up. So all I want you to know is just be careful what you read. And if we're not creating jobs and it's 100,000 new jobs, that's nothing. It's going to take till 2025 to get us out of the fix we're in.
That's right.
All right. Well, be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.